Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome back to the Munganass St. Louis Honda Sports Open Line.
Munganass pre-owned on South Limburg.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, a big thanks to Mike Petriello for joining us to talk baseball. Again, check him out at MLB.com. Lots coming up this hour as we'll talk a little hockey with our East Coast NHL correspondent Brian Bach. In just a few minutes, we will also talk some baseball with John Mozeliak, the president of baseball operations, who's with us every Sunday, and talk a little Mizzou. Not great for Mizzou this weekend. Nothing going well for that football team, it seems like. And disappointing, I mean, not that anyone really, I don't think, expected them to go and win at Georgia, but just, holy cow, the way that game went and the way it played out, just never really, really thought you had much of a shot. Which is too bad. For a season that started with such high and I think reasonably high expectations, it's just, you know, been almost inexplicable at times that this is the same team that played the way they played in, you know, the midst of that 5-game homestand. So, again, just frustrating. Let's hear a little bit from Jamie McGinn, one of the two guys brought in on a PTO by the Blues. You heard Ryan O'Reilly say that he recommended him to Doug Armstrong.
Yeah, with Vladdy going down, you know, and then, you know, Steiner going down, two guys that are, you know, irreplaceable, that, you know, just to add a veteran guy, someone to come in and see what he can do. And I know personally what he can do. You know, it was something we discussed, and we think it's something that could definitely help our club.
And here is a little bit from McGinn.
He fit in well with our style. You know, he's a guy that...
Nope, still O'Reilly. Here's a little bit from McGinn.
A few weeks ago, I was in Charlotte and everything, and didn't work out there and had the itch to play. And was talking with Ryan and everything, and just came about pretty quickly. And just happy for this opportunity, and hopefully, you know, I can stick around a little longer and help this team win. You know, they're doing a great job right now, and just don't want to get in the way and just keep working hard.
A veteran guy, I mean, how do you view a situation like PTO? I mean, have you gone through one of these before?
No, but I mean, just going to come to the rink with a smile on my face every day, just be fun to be around and work hard, and anything they need me to do, I'm going to do. That's all it is. At the end of the day, it's still hockey. Got to work hard. You know, my game's not fancy, so just north-south, play hard, and hopefully, you know, I can bring that to the team and, you know, just work hard this week in practice and hopefully get in some games.
You'll fit in right here. Okay. I mean, wouldn't you agree the Blues?
No, I've noticed. I mean, you know, they've done that for a long time. It was a recipe for success last year and winning the Stanley Cup. So, I mean, why not continue to do that? It's very hard to play against. It frustrates other teams. So if I can bring that element and continue it and just, you know, add another element to another line that, you know, works hard and hems teams in their end, you know, that's my job and that's what I hope to do.
Did things accelerate? Can you tell when Steen went down, you know, in terms of you being here?
It was kind of already in the conversation before that happened. And then, you know, just them being in Canada, everything was a little bit, you know, just give me a week and, you know, get ready. And the plan was all along to come here yesterday and practice today. So
do you have to come in with in this situation with an open mind and really not have any expectations? Or do you
I come in and I'm going to work hard every day to make the team. You know, if you have open expectations, that means you're open to not sticking around and not making it, and that's not my goal at the end of the day. I want to be here. I want to be a Blue, and I want to help the team win. You know, coming to a team that knows how to win the Cup, that's definitely, you know, is one of my top destinations I wanted to be this year, so I'm going to do anything I can to stay.
Jamie McGinn, one of the two guys brought in on a PTO, and we'll talk some more hockey coming up after the break. Our East Coast Sports Open Line NHL correspondent Brian Bach joins me next as we kick off the 7 o'clock hour. Hanging out until 8 o'clock, Chris Raby with you, Zach Schmidt in the house as well. Back after this.
Come back to the Munganess St. Louis Honda Sports Open Line.
Munganess St. Louis Honda on South Limburg.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Hanging out until 8 o'clock. Thank you to Darren Pang for joining us. Mike Petriello as well. Chris Raby with you. Zach Schmidt in the house as well.
All right, had to give our resident Sports Open Line hockey expert and Eastern Conference hockey expert a call to chat with us tonight as our guy Brian Bach joins us on the program. Bach, what's up, man?
Hey, Chris, how you doing?
We're doing well. We're enjoying a nice run for the Blues, enjoying a fun start to the NHL season. And, you know, more than anything, I think watching this Blues team, you talk to people and you hear things and you hear the term a lot, Stanley Cup hangover. And I know that for a team that wins the Cup, you'll see them the next year do all of the pomp and circumstance, and they all have their day, and they lead up to the regular season, which seems to come so fast. The Blues have the White House visit. Every building you play in, it's the defending Stanley Cup champions. Do you believe in that? And how do we see teams that are successful with turning the page after a Stanley Cup season do that?
I think it's hard not to believe in it. It just, you look at how difficult it's been to repeat as champions in this league. The playoff run is such a grind. It's physical. It's emotional. Guys play through injuries that sometimes force them to forego a full recovery because they decide that they're going to lace them up again and not shorten their offseason, not get that surgery, not get that, you know, scope or cleanup. Because they want to be back on the ice for the next 82-game grind alongside the team that just won the Cup. So it's, I think it's very real phenomenon. But I think the teams that are successful in overcoming it do so the same way that this Blues team is off to the start of their season. It's by playing with the same structure. It's by playing with the same systems, staying consistent night in and night out, buying in, letting other guys step up, and it doesn't always have to be the star. You're seeing this from this Blues team, you know, losing a guy like Vladimir Tarasenko and not missing a beat speaks a lot about the caliber of that locker room. And I think those are the types of teams that are successful in the post-Cup years.
Yeah, I think that fans also might not even realize the extent that some of these guys, A, are playing banged up, whether or not you win the Cup in the postseason. And then also, like, when you get deeper and deeper into the playoffs, just how short the postseason is. Game 7 was June 12th for the Blues and the Bruins, and then 3 months later, they're basically on the ice for a preseason game. So, you know, someone like Tarasenko, who had been so healthy for the entirety of his career, like, you just add the mileage that a playoff run puts on you and the toll that can take on guys, whether or not you end up winning.
Yeah, it's really remarkable, and I think one of the things about today's game that continues to be fascinating for many is how detailed these guys are about their off-season training programs. And sometimes you see the players who take the biggest year-over-year leaps are the guys who have the most opportunity to work in the off-season on themselves as individuals. And it's not the guys that are coming off of a Cup-winning season who have to just spend the time to simply recover and rest their bodies and nurse injuries back to full strength before they can get into their off-season training acumen. So that's, I think, one of the reasons why sometimes you see some of the younger players, the higher draft picks who go to traditionally weaker teams, have the opportunity to make significant leaps in the earliest years of their career because they're playing on teams that aren't as successful. And then, yeah, the mileage and the wear and tear of some of these guys in their career is unbelievable. It makes, you know, a guy like Zdeno Chara, who's been an absolute playoff monster and played, you know, just so many games in such high leverage situations where he's playing 35 plus minutes in overtime games. To have the longevity of somebody like that it's a testament.
Brian Bach is with us, our guy up in New York, talking some NHL hockey on Sports Open Line. You know, it's funny, I was thinking the other day and talking on the air, Cardinals manager Mike Schilt, one of the three finalists for National League Manager of the Year. And, you know, he took over in mid-2018, did some pretty incredible things this year for the Cardinals. They snapped a playoff drought, dealt with some injuries. And I always kind of find it interesting how we evaluate or how voters evaluate Coach of the Year and that award, whether it's based on preseason expectations and then the coach that maybe in voters' eyes overachieved the most, if it's a person who did the best wire-to-wire job, if it's someone who dealt with a unique set of circumstances or in a new situation. And I was thinking about Barry Trotz last year with the Islanders, the team you root for, and there were kind of all three of those guys, the three finalists. You had Berube, who was dropped in the middle of the season and completely turned the Blues around. You had Cooper down in Tampa, wire-to-wire, just an incredible team, expected to be an incredible team, and probably were even better than that. And then you had Trotz, who, you know, was fresh off a cup, dropped into a new situation. John Tavares leaves. They're playing in two buildings. Lou Lamoriello's in there. Like, three guys in three uniquely different set of circumstances, and I think you could have made a case for all three of them.
They all had incredible seasons, and it's hard to overlook, you know, what Berube did and the Blues going from worst to first to cup. It's historic. The Tampa Bay Lightning season was also historic from a regular season standpoint. It's tough to overstate that. But I do think that when you're voting on an award, there seems to be a bit of overlooking of how well coaches coach great teams. Or how well coaches coach good teams. And I think when you get a situation like the Islanders where, you know, seemingly the wheels are all off in their offseason and you think they're heading for an absolute dumpster fire of a season, for Trotz to put in the organization and the structure and make them one of the toughest teams to play against in the league night in and night out 82 times in a row, for them to defy preseason expectations, and I know they say that the vote happens before the playoffs, but to go in and take out, you know, a team with Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin and guys that are multiple Stanley Cup ring holders in four successive games was nothing short of fascinating to watch. Equally disappointing when you go up against an upstart Hurricanes team in the next round and are shown the door in the same four-game way. But the expectations, I think, plays a significant part in how awards are viewed at the end of a season. And a lot of times the narrative, I think, sometimes overtakes the actual skill in coaching. Not that Trotz isn't a completely deserving character, and you're seeing that with how well the Islanders are starting this season, that it wasn't some kind of one-season wonder. The narrative can definitely overstate, I think, in certain situations.
Yeah, like, it's crazy to me that Joel Quenneville never won a Jack Adams with the Blackhawks.
Yeah, you think about how good of a coach you have to be to take a core like that, which obviously had a great amount of talent, but, you know, you think about their three different cup teams and think about the different role players that came in and bought in and figured out how to play that system in a hurry. That's all Quenneville, right? It's a lot in the locker room, and it's a testament to guys that are leaders there like Taze and Keith and Seabrook who make guys feel welcome. But the coach is the one who's giving everybody the direction about how the system works. And then when the teams that are there at the end are the teams who have the best buy-in because so many of these teams are so talented. And I think coaches, we often say, get too much of the credit and too much of the blame. But when you're doing it on such a repeated basis with a group that had as many transactions and changes and roster turnover aside from maybe the core four or five guys that the Blackhawks did, Quenneville certainly someone who you look at their resume and stands out as almost a trivia question about how somebody you'd never guess hadn't won a Jack Adams.
Brian Bach with us. We talk NHL hockey on Sports Open Line. We were texting last week when the Blues traded Robbie Fabbri to the Detroit Red Wings, and he heads to the East. And an interesting situation, too, Bach, where, you know, Fabbri, just an example, a perfect example of a player with tantalizing talent. He was so good a couple of years ago in the playoffs for the Blues, got injured a couple of times, still a fan favorite. And an organization deciding to make a move to send him somewhere when he's not playing Yzerman and the Red Wings need talent, need skill. They plug him in, but it can be hard for a fan base when you trade a guy like that. There have been some injuries. He hasn't been getting playing time, but you know the talent's there, right?
Absolutely, and I think as a fan, it makes it a lot easier to stomach one of those trades when you're coming off a Stanley Cup championship, or you give a little bit of credit to the front office that maybe they're doing what they think is in the best interest of the organization at the time, both in the short and the longer term. But I think what's really fascinating about the Fabry trade and some of the others that we've seen around the league in the last year or so is that GMs are, I don't want to say opening the wallet necessarily, but there certainly seems to be much less friction in the transaction game. You're seeing GMs not be afraid to make these change of scenery trades where in the past, if you're a GM, you might feel like I can't give up on this young talent because if he goes somewhere and becomes a star, it's going to cost me my job. You've seen really highly touted prospects in the last two or three years. You saw Domi for Galchenyuk. You saw Drouin for Sergachev. You've seen the Penguins pick up guys like Riley Sheahan and Justin Schultz, you know, who fell out at their respective organizations for whatever reasons. And I think that in a large part, it's because the handful of years before that, you've seen teams that picked up guys who organizations tried to slip through the waiver wire and send back into the minors for more seasoning, who came into the league and made an impact. The Islanders are a great example. They picked up, you know, Matt Molson, who had a couple of 30-goal seasons riding shotgun with John Tavares. They picked up Thomas Hickey, a former top draft pick who couldn't cut it with the Kings for whatever reason and played 450 games for the franchise. They picked up Michael Grabner, a former first-round pick for the Canucks that couldn't make the roster, and he scored 90 goals over 5 years with the Isles. So I think there's an element of, you know, what's the best way to stay within the confines of roster management to try to maximize talent, to try to maximize roster needs from a short-term and a long-term perspective. And it's exciting as a fan to see some of these change of scenery trades because, you know, a guy like Fabry definitely deserves to be playing real minutes at the NHL level, and it's fun to see him have the opportunity for that, even if it's not in St. Louis. And I think if you're St. Louis, you know, look at your Stanley Cup banner and smile and wish a guy like him well in his next organization and hope that the return for him in the trade is something that helps in the short and the long term.
Yeah, and there's got to be something, too, for organizations and managers doing right by their guys, right, in terms of, like, the way you do business and relationships with agents and other organizations. I'm not saying that if a guy's a healthy scratch a couple of times, you're going to give him away for 50 cents on the dollar, but it's part of doing business, right?
100%. And I think, you know, when you think about how these organizations are able to attract talent, there's really only a handful of ways. They can draft someone out of the entry draft. They can make a trade and acquire a player and their rights, or they can sign them as a free agent. And free agency is becoming an increasingly important component of how teams finish off rosters that go on to win championships. And you want to be seen as an organization that's going to be doing right by players. You want young players to be excited to be drafted into your organization because they know they're going to get a fair crack to make it, or they're going to get a fair crack to make it on another team in the National Hockey League, which is their ultimate goal. So I think it's great that, you know, the Blues were able to find a home for Fabry that seems to be working out with him so far, a couple of good games for the Red Wings. And I think you're going to continue to see this from general managers across the National Hockey League, especially when you see positive results on both sides of some of these change of scenery trades like we've seen over the last year or two.
Bach, your Isles are rolling outside of the Islanders. Who's your favorite team to watch or catch a glimpse of so far this year?
Well, they ended our season last year, but it's hard not to enjoy watching the Carolina Hurricanes. There's such an immense amount of young talent on that team. From the back end on out, they remind me a lot of, you know, the teams that are winning championships like the Blues that just have really stacked 1 through 4 on defense, guys that are contributing on offense on all their lines. They're fun to watch. I think I've always enjoyed watching the Nashville Predators much the same. There's a guy like PK Subban, and they're still, you know, amongst the best 1 through 4 on defense in the National Hockey League with guys like Josi and Ekholm. Ellis leading the way. They're always fun to catch, and obviously it's hard not to enjoy watching last year's Stanley Cup champions to see how they handle that hangover we were talking about before.
Yeah, and blow a two-goal lead up in New York against the Islanders. Brian Bach, appreciate it, brother. Always enjoy chatting with you and chatting some hockey. Hope all's well with the family. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Chris. Anytime.
It's Brian Bach, our East Coast NHL correspondent, joining us on Sports Open Line. We're going to talk a little baseball. Mike Petriello of MLB.com joined me last hour. We will hear from John Mozeliak, Cardinals president of baseball operations, next. GM meetings coming up, 3 weeks away from the winter meetings in San Diego. So hopefully we see the market start to churn a little bit and see some activity. We'll hear from Mo, get his perspective next. Chris Ramby, 30 minutes to go as we're hanging out on a Monday night. Zach Schmidt in the house as well. Be safe if you're out driving around. And we're back after this in KMOX. Hanging out until 8 o'clock, Chris Ramby with you, and we talk a little more baseball, as he does every week. Cardinals president of baseball operations joined Tom Ackerman yesterday on Sports on a Sunday morning.
Do you get into college football at all, Mo? You're from Boulder, so that's a when you were growing up, that team was starting to get it going, wasn't it?
Well, they had a big win yesterday. I don't follow college football like I once did, but my father was a Penn State grad, so you're killing him. But, you know, like anybody this time of year, I don't have that much going on, so I'll tune in a game or two. So I watched the LSU game last night.
Oh, I did too. Man, wow, there's so much talent on that field. Oh, my goodness. What an incredible game that was. What an atmosphere. That's a great place, by the way. Alabama is kind of like when Busch Stadium is rocking. Smart crowd. They know their stuff. It's not the most raucous or rude place. You know, like LSU is a crazy scene. Alabama just has great tradition, great feel. It's a lot of fun. Those were some heavyweights going at it last night.
Yes, it was.
Big time. By the way, Folsom Field, I always had some fun going. I've been to a few games over at Colorado. I had some good times.
Great atmosphere. Beautiful place, too.
Good times. So it's been a couple weeks since we had you on the show, and you know, a little bit of an off-season breather here as you get ready for the GM meetings in Arizona. You had a press conference where you met with the media at Busch Stadium, kind of laid out and look back at 2019 and some of the thoughts on 2020. I think the feel that I got from it was the fact that, you know, you're really at this point feeling like your philosophy is working, that the developing players through the system and seeing what they can do and growing your team in that way is working, and you've found a way to get back to the NLCS while acknowledging there are still a lot of things that you need to do moving ahead.
Yeah, I would imagine over the next month or so, we'll probably find some things we haven't thought about. We've probably put a lot of energy into just trying to get a better understanding of what perhaps the trade market looks like. Obviously, this first week out in Arizona will be spent mostly meeting with agents and just trying to get a sense of what that looks like. But you know, from our standpoint, we feel pretty good about where we are. We're certainly going to try to explore what ways we think we can get better. But to your point, we are going to bet heavily on our future, on what we're developing in our minor leagues. So, you know, a lot's invested in that. And when you look at some of the talent we have coming, we're certainly excited about that.
You do have a lot of great talent coming. I want to talk about them in just a moment. Also, when it comes to free agency and trades, everybody would love to see off-season splashes, I think, from a fan standpoint. It's entertaining. There's a lot that goes on from that standpoint. You're not going to come out, though, in a press conference like that at Busch Stadium and say, hey, we're going to spend some money. I mean, we're going to be aggressive. We're going to make trades. We're going to spend some money. I mean, nope. Does anybody come out and say that right away if you're the executive of a baseball team?
Well, I think the answer is sometimes. You know, you go back to last year and you know, we certainly thought we had to do something as we approached the end of 18 and we're trying to reflect on how we thought we could get better. And so we knew we would be active somewhere, whether it was that, you know, heavily involved in the trade market or free agent market, and ultimately trying to improve our club. So, you know, like trying to have somebody show what their off-season strategy might look like, I don't think is necessarily bad, but there's also times where there are strategic reasons why you want to be a little bit, hold things a little closer to your vest before you just start announcing things. Plus, there's always that sort of trying to help manage expectations, right? And so you can claim you're going to be very aggressive, and if you're not, then people really are disappointed. Whereas if you temper that a little bit, it's a little bit more controlled atmosphere.
The free agent market last year was so slow, and I think a lot of people were hoping that there would be some fireworks at the winter meetings and on, but you know, the Bryce Harper one that everybody was paying attention to really dragged on for a long time. Do you expect this, not an easy question to answer because you haven't even gotten to the GM meetings yet, but do you expect the free agent market to be that way again?
You know, I hope not, because I don't think it was necessarily the greatest thing for our game when people were just complaining about it. But I will say one of the unintended consequences was everybody was talking about it.
Yes.
So, you know, there's a give and take there. Not sure which is more valuable or better. But, you know, I think this year there's obviously some dynamic free agents out there. It will be an interesting offseason just because majority of the elite free agents are controlled by one agent. So I definitely think it'll be fun to see how that unfolds. But, you know, with regard to the pace of it, it really is an unknown.
And that agent would be Scott Boras, as we all know. One client who is no longer with Scott Boras, though, is Marcell Ozuna, who just finished a season where he drove in 89, hit 29 home runs, missed a good chunk of time. It's not easy to replace your cleanup hitter. He hasn't left yet. You've given him a qualifying offer of $17.8 million. He has a little more time to accept or move on from that. But kind of where do you stand right now in your mind on Marcell Ozuna?
Well, it's the question shouldn't be where do I stand in my mind. The question is, you know, where are we with this type of negotiation? And as you know, and you've known me a long time, we don't talk about free agents. We don't talk about where we are in negotiations. So unfortunately, it's just not a question I can engage. But, you know, as I stated earlier, this week I'll start to have some defining moments and we'll see where it goes.
Gotcha. And then when it comes to Adam Wainwright and some conversations there, how are things progressing with one of the great right-handers this team has ever seen?
See my last answer. nothing changes, Tommy, in what I can say here.
Yeah, I gotcha.
There's a lot of rules. There's a lot of things you don't want to get yourself in trouble with. And unfortunately, that's not a popular answer for your listeners, but you don't get here by luck. So you got to focus on staying true.
That's right. Hey, you know, you're doing your job. Absolutely. I'm putting those two names out there, of course, because those are the two names that most people are buzzing about after the season and want to see their future. We all understand that, but that's the answer. And that's what you have to do. I look at your outfield. And I don't know. I think you have some great options if Marcell Ozuna is not back. Inexperience, yes, but one of them, Dexter Fowler, is still under contract. Harrison Bader has started in center field, still under contract, and somebody that has seen a lot of good time. But boy, do you have some options. I mean, Rosarena and O'Neill and Lane Thomas, and if something were to happen where he was good enough to be on this 2020 team, Dylan Carlson certainly has the tools. I mean, I think you'd have to feel good about your depth right now.
Well, we do. And I think part of when you just list off those names is trying to figure out what that would look like if any of those individuals were to actually get 650 plate appearances. What type of performance would we get? And so, you know, that's one of those very difficult questions that internally from the baseball side we're trying to answer. But, you know, time will tell. But to my earlier point on where we feel good about what we have coming, that's why we're excited.
Yeah, there's an exciting time right now. I you know, another prospect that I'm excited to see what he looks like in the next few years is Andrew Kisner. Just looking back on what he's done for you, his rise over the last couple of years, how would you evaluate him?
Well, he's had a very steady and progressive trip through the minor leagues. I still think as a converted player, meaning a position change from infield to catcher, there's still some things that he needs to work on to really sort of take that role of an everyday player at the big league level. But I certainly felt like when he came up to the big leagues this past year, there were reasons to be excited. And I felt like some of the defensive liabilities that some people would talk about, I didn't see. So I really feel like his progression is going quite well. And I think we've all got to see the offensive upside that he might bring to a lineup. So, you know, you combine those two skills, it's going to be something that will be exciting to watch over the next few years.
And those that will eventually throw to him when he is a catcher, you've got some great names in there. You feel like you have good depth in terms of starters for the future right now, John?
You know, I definitely feel like we have a lot of good options. Some of that is a bit untested. And we still have that big question mark with what are we going to get out of someone like an Alex Reyes? And, you know, you got to be careful on building a team around potential because sometimes that can be very disappointing. But having said that, there are these talents that have yet to really get to where we hope they would be. So I think it's a really important offseason for someone like Alex. I think somebody like Ponce de Leon is looking for that opportunity. I'm not saying he's going to get a starting spot or will he have a role in the bullpen. But when you look at the depth or options we have, you know, we certainly feel good about where we are from a pitching standpoint.
And just finally, to circle back to offense and trying to get better from within, how can – this is, again, very general question here, but we all saw the inconsistencies of the offense. So what – sort of things would you like to see laid out in this off season and leading into spring training and then through that spring training program? How do you improve offensive consistency with this group?
Well, I feel a couple things. One is, you know, last year we made a dramatic change in how we thought about what we were going to teach, what we wanted to see our hitters do. And, you know, in hindsight, I think, you know, we probably tried to be a little bit too aggressive on that note. So this offseason, we're going to have a little bit more time to digest that. I think, you know, trying to follow Jeff Albert's philosophy on hard contact, just add the word often in there and you'll feel better about it. But, you know, ultimately, he's one of those guys that I think from a teaching standpoint, an approach standpoint, he could be a huge asset to all our hitters. And I certainly am very bullish that our offense is going to look a little different next year. And I think how we go about it and how we approach it from an off-season strategy is very important and very critical to our success. And I promise you, we're going to work very hard on that. And I really look forward to seeing what those results might look like.
And two quick things before we go, and these are a lot of fun. One, Colton Wong. Man, to see that smile on his face when he held that gold glove, that is something. He's worked hard, hasn't he, to get to that point?
Well, he has, and he's an extremely talented player. And when you put it all together, you can see such a positive outcome. But, you know, I think overall, when you look at just where he was from a year ago to where he is today, he's grown, he's matured, and should have a really bright future in front of him.
Yeah, with Goldschmidt and DeJong and Flaherty and Bader and Molina all in top three at their positions, those five don't get the gold glove, and Wong does. But that tells you something about this defensive turnaround. It really is remarkable. And one of the guys behind that is Mike Schilt. And what he did to put emphasis on that, you have to be pretty proud that in his first full year as a manager, he's in the running for manager of the year and could win it.
Yeah, I think he has a really good chance. Yeah, I'm extremely proud of him, but not surprised. Talented guy, works hard, very intentional on how he goes about his day and what his expectations are. So those are the things that attract you about someone like him and, you know, certainly hopeful that he does win it.
Appreciate your time very much. It's always great to have you on KMOX. Thanks for talking some ball with me.
All right, thank you.
John Mozeliak with Tom Ackerman yesterday on sports on a Sunday morning. I find that topic of how voters come to their decisions on an award like Manager of the Year so intriguing. Mike Petriello said he's glad he doesn't have a vote because it's that challenging. And I guess you could use a variety of rubrics to
come to the conclusion that you ultimately come to. We'll take a break, come back, and a couple more Cardinals thoughts before we get out of here on this snowy Monday. Chris Raby with you, Zach Schmidt in the house as well. Back in a moment on KMOX. All right, a big thanks to Mike Petriello, Darren Pang, Brian Bach, and also John Mozeliak for joining us on the program. Ben Boyd, our executive producer, thanks to Zach Schmidt as well. Shows all week. We'll be back tomorrow. Blues will be back on the ice over at Enterprise Center, and we'll continue our countdown towards winter meetings, winter warm-up, spring training. We'll keep plugging along as the Major League Baseball offseason gets going and hopefully gives us some more to talk about. Because, you know, Mizzou football. Oh, goodness. But hang in there. Blues have won 7 in a row. So you got to feel good about that, right? Once again, a big thank you to all of the folks from the Ali Hinkle Heart Foundation for having me out yesterday and allowing me to be a part of an incredible afternoon raising money for an incredible cause and some incredible people. And as they continue to fund research and advancements, specifically in the area of children's congenital heart defects, you know, I was standing up at stage at one point with this guy, Grant, little guy who's been there the last couple of years, has helped us out. He sells raffle tickets, and he was so emotional about all the money we were raising. And I think about Grant, all these little kids that were up there. Some of them have had multiple open heart surgeries when they're weeks old, months old, right? And they kept fighting. So when crap pops up, when you've got issues, keep fighting. It's about, you know, the fight in people like Grant, the fight in you, and the fight in the people around you. So that was really special to be a part of yesterday. Until tomorrow, Chris Raby, Sam, be nice to each other, and as always, peace.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.